the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site that covers your Arizona Cardinals. And with me in episode 526 is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. In this second show of the week, Seth, since we last recorded, the Cardinals have done nothing. Nothing's happened except they released safety Quantrez Knight. That is not something that needs to be discussed because he played a total of 40 defensive snaps, 32 special team snaps, and didn't log a single statistic. So other than what Doug Farrar said, is that the Cardinals now are weaker in their Scrabble game in terms of names because it was Quantrez Knight. So, yeah.
And the thing is with him, and like at this time of year, and you know, obviously, like nothing happens, so that's always good. But like, it's always one of those things where you sit back and you're like, oh crap, is like something coming on top of that, like an arrest or something, you know, like just this time of year where these knuckleheads can be knuckleheads at times. I mean, God, can you imagine having to write about the Detroit Lions right now? Like, just stuff. Stuff happens.
Or the Los Angeles Dodgers, if we did baseball.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah, where you're like, oh, no. The guy that we just signed to $500 billion has a gambling issue.
That's, oh, my gosh. It sounds so crazy. And so, oh, his interpreter stole $4.5 million to cover gambling debts, and it definitely wasn't Ohtani.
Yeah,
gambling.
Placing those bets. Yeah,
it definitely wasn't Ohtani. It definitely wasn't the biggest star in Major League Baseball.
Right.
In the world.
Not, I was going to say not just Major League Baseball, right? Like the world. So, yeah. It's
like, I doesn't seem to matter. I don't have any real opinion on that other than how is baseball going to make this work? Because.
Right.
Like, well, if we go back to conspiracy theories, if you go back to the 90s, and there was the conspiracy belief that hiatus that Michael Jordan took after the first three-peat was a quiet suspension for gambling. I mean, there's other stuff going on, but there's been more than one person to suggest that was the case, that he went away for a couple of years because, hey, he needed to take care of that. That's not what we're talking about this show today, because Jonathan Gannon and Monty Austin Ford did address the media on Wednesday. Their first comments to the public, to reporters here locally, since the start of the new year. And as we know, there isn't a whole lot to be said, but we want to talk a little bit about that and then delve into a more league-wide thing, as the NFL's annual league meeting is being held next week. And this is where, aside from, you know, rumors and discussions and deals get made, there are changes to rules and bylaws and things that could happen. We're going to kind of run through those in the second part of the show, since we are not only Cardinals, but general NFL coverage, especially this time of year. We want to make sure that we're giving you guys regular content as we've tried to change the format to multiple shows per week. So it's not just Cardinals. It's not just NFC West, but things that might affect the Cardinals. So, for you, when if you could kind of go through Austin Ford and Gannon's press conference, what was kind of your biggest takeaway, like the thing that stood out to you the most? Generally speaking, they don't give us a whole lot, and I kind of wish they did give us more, because come on, throw us a bone, give us speculation that we can run with.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is just that they do a whole lot of. They say a whole lot about nothing, right? Like they just don't necessarily say very much as they're going through their press conferences. And it's one of those situations that you look at and you're just like, how do you deal with that? And it's not a bad thing. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, but it's just one of those situations where, you know, they like to have conversations, and in the end, they just don't really say much in those conversations.
So we're going to be available for reporters, but we will not tell them much of anything. I mean, you know, I guess the one that got the biggest national coverage, you'll see it on NFL.com, you'll see it on all kind of the media outlets, is when Monty was asked if he was open for business, he said, put a bright neon sign that says open, that they are most certainly open for business for the draft. That he's not against any sort of trade or being proposed trade. That doesn't mean I do not think that there is a general manager that isn't open for business technically and that wouldn't take phone calls. Of course they're gonna take phone calls. That's his job. But we saw the wheeling and dealing that he did last year. And so while things look perfectly set up for them to grab that big time receiver in Marvin Harrison Jr. He's not going to shut down the possibility of trading it or any other pick. And I think that was the soundbite, but it makes absolute sense.
Yeah, definitely. And it's one of those situations that you look at and, you know, they are going to do what's best for the team. And that's kind of where they're at in this situation. And for them, it really boils down to, okay, how do you dictate what is best for the franchise moving forward? You know, I think everybody has their opinion, right? Like, that's the beautiful thing about all of this, is that there's necessarily not a right or wrong answer, but there is everybody's opinion on the subject. And we've seen what some people think, and we've heard what other people think. And for Monty, it's about finding out, like, what is the best path forward for them. And, you know, when you talk about being open for business, I think what you're talking about more than anything is you're saying, like, hey, if the right deal comes along, we are 100% open to making that move. But it has to be, and this sounds weird when you say it, but, you know, if you really dive in, it makes sense. It has to be the most beneficial to the Arizona Cardinals.
Like, oh, right, right.
If you're giving up the opportunity to draft, you know, generational type prospects, what people are saying about guys like Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, and Rome Odunze, because, you know, everybody's response is, well, just trade back up for one.
Somebody to trade with.
Right. Just like you have to have a dance partner. In terms of trading down, you have to have a dance partner in terms of trading back up. And they're unfortunately at a position right now where there's a lot of teams that, you know, don't necessarily need to move at all, because they've got the guys that they kind of want in place. And so when you look at it from that indication, it's, you know, it makes it really difficult to decide, like, all right, is the whole move, is something like that going to be worth passing up on, you know, these guys X or Y? And that's, you know, that's what the question becomes. And you know, and then the next question is, if you go down, let's say, you know, we've talked a lot about the Vikings, right? If you make that move down to 11. And so you end up with 11, 23, and let's just say they sweeten the pot and throw in next year's one, which is a massive haul.
That would be a deal that would be nearly impossible to turn down, because
But the question becomes then, you know, and this is the reality, is that player, is player X, so let's say, you know, in the consensus mock boards right now and stuff like that. And, you know, again, these are all just tools that we all use. You know, we have no idea how accurate, but the players in that region, right? Number 9, Brock Bowers, number 11, Terrion Arnold, number 12, Quinyon Mitchell, number 13, Jared Verse. Like, if one of those guys is available, are they of the caliber of player, or are you giving up an A player to get a B or B plus player because, you know, you're looking at quantity over quality in this instance? So it's just, these are all just decisions that I, you know, it's a lot easier to do it from this angle when you're like, oh yeah, just do that, and then it doesn't work out, and you're like, didn't work out. What are you gonna do?
Here's a scenario. So if it were 11-23 and next year's first for number four, okay, cool, and then they go and say, you know, McCarthy's the guy that obviously that the Vikings want, and if the Giants, they're like, well, dang, we wanted McCarthy. Say they're able to trade 11 and 27, right, up to number six, and they get Malik Nabers. In that scenario, you basically instead of getting Harrison, you get Nabers plus next year's first, and you moved up four spots in the first round. That's a win, but.
Right.
That's in this scenario, you're like, okay, that's perfect. You can't guarantee that happens.
Well, you can't just guarantee that happens. And while all of us are extremely happy with Paris Johnson, we're excited about, you know, his future and potential and things of that nature. You know, when you look at it, the fact that it worked out, but it didn't work out right with the Texans. The thought was you were going to have two picks in the pseudo lottery, right? Like, using an NBA reference, like, you're going to have two playoff team picks to utilize. And instead, now you're picking at the end of round one.
And you passed on the great young pass rusher, Will Anderson. Right. Granted, Paris Johnson is the guy Kyler wanted. Everyone in the building gushes about not only his technique, his talent, his ability to move, but also the way he approaches the game, which, you know, barring injury, it suggests that Paris Johnson Jr. is going to be a great lineman. Just like the way his teammates talk about him, DJ talked about him, Will Hernandez talked about him. They see a high end future about Johnson in the future and moving forward.
And that's what you need. I mean, let's be honest, they have to get that, because if he ends up just being a you know, and this is no disrespect to DJ Humphries at all, but if he ends up being a DJ Humphries level, like, you know, borderline Pro Bowl or makes one here or there, and they passed on a guy that, you know, ends up being an all pro. And because then 27 becomes that much more important, right? Because then 27 has to be a home run pick.
Right.
And so that's what you're, again, and it's kind of what we ended last show with. Like, it's like the bites of the apple are awesome, but at some point too,
they gotta be good apples.
right. You're just chewing on a core, and you're like, this used to be a great apple, but now I got nothing left. So that's the thing. I mean, I don't envy a GM, and that's at the end of the day, guys like John Lynch get super lucky too, right? I mean,
yes.
Think about John
Brock Purdy. Come on,
right?
Come on. They traded three first round picks to get Trey Lance. That didn't work. That should have gotten that. That's the type of thing that gets GMs fired. No, they picked Brock Purdy.
Right.
No one thought Brock Purdy was going to be that.
No, not at all. And so it just ends up being those things where it's like, oh, this guy's a genius. And it's like, I mean, think about hit two of his top draft picks, like the years as he, you know, he's been the guy, right? And you look at it and you look at, he drafted, and I want to double check to make sure I'm correct, but I'm pretty sure he drafted Solomon Thomas as well, right?
Like, I think so.
And so you look at it and you're like, this is a guy who whiffed on two.
Oh yeah, Solomon Thomas was the guy that was. Picks. Yeah, the Solomon Thomas, and then on top of that, you know, you could say Javon Kinlaw also, who basically they replaced DeForest Buckner with Javon Kinlaw and got one healthy season of not even average production.
Well, and think about this craziness, dude. His first draft was Solomon Thomas, Reuben Foster, Akilo Witherspoon, who's been fine, CJ Beathard, and Joe Williams. Like those were his first five picks.
Now, granted, they did get a haul of picks for the trade down when the Bears traded up to get Trubisky, but right. then they didn't do much with those afterwards.
Right, but you think about that. Who did they get in the fifth round? George Kittle. Like, it's just sometimes, and I get that that's scouting and blah, blah, blah. But it's like, dude, this. How lucky are you that you got George Kittle, that you got Fred Warner, right? You got Fred Warner the year after you drafted Reuben Foster, and he ends up being the best, you know, linebacker in the NFL. You were able to pick up Dre Greenlaw in the fifth round. You were able to pick up a guy, that, like we said, like Brock Purdy the year after you whiffed on Trey Lance. Like, those are just lucky situations, and sometimes it is just the old saying, it's better to be lucky than good.
Well, like, and at the same time, that while it is lucky, that is good work by their scouts, because look at what the Cardinals have gotten from their day three picks over the last decade.
But to be fair, you never expect to get,
but like you're getting like even the ones that some of them become stars, but like the Cardinals barely get players that contribute past a season, right?
Right. No, and that's the thing. So that's what you just have to, and maybe that's what it is, right? You're like, hey, you know, just get more picks and you throw more crap at the wall and you just hope that every once in a while you get a Fred Warner and a Dre Green, you know, like think about those drafts we're talking about for the 49ers and where they're at, right? Their drafts were George Kittle, basically their drafts. Their drafts were George Kittle, Fred Warner, Nick Bosa, Debo Samuel, and Dre Greenlaw. Brandon Ayuk, because they didn't get anything. I mean, Juwan Jennings has been a nice seventh rounder, don't get me wrong. Oh, yeah. But like, I mean, those were their picks. Like, they, you know, Solomon Thomas, he's just a bust. I mean, for the third overall pick, he's a bust. Reuben Foster, obviously off the field issues.
Bust.
Dante Pettis, a bust. Mike McGlinchey, they didn't re-sign. He was a top 10 pick. People forget, like, they picked in the top 10 2 years in a row.
Yeah. Now, McGlinchey was not a bad player, but no, they didn't like him enough to bring him back.
Right. And they replaced him with a fifth rounder who they're trying to replace now. So it's like, you know, those situations, that's what's so interesting to me, because it is sometimes you look at it and you go, okay, is it the quantity to have nine picks and you just hit on one of them, but they just happen to be Fred Warner and they're, you know, a game-changing inside linebacker? Or do you hope that the year that you have the opportunity to pick a Nick Bosa and a Debo Samuel, that you pair that with a Dre Greenlaw on day three, and you're just like, holy cow, look how good we are at what we did that year. Yeah. And so that is literally what we're discussing right now. It's like, are you looking at the Niners 2018 draft and you're like, oh, you get a Mike McGlinchey level player, right? And then maybe you get a better player than Dante Pettis. Or are you like, oh no, we're going to get the alphas. We're going to get the guys that are the best at their position. Like, it's just an interesting juxtaposition, because we see it play out all the time, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And, you know, more, and I think a lot of it for us as Cardinals fans is a lot of times it's not worked. And so you're just like, why don't you just take the guy that's really good and you don't have to worry about any of this.
Right. That would make sense. Jonathan Gannon kind of put the kibosh on the questions that we would ask all offseason, that we will speculate offseason, and that's where people are going to play. And Gannon said, frankly, you're going to ask me 132 times, but you'll know where like we will know who's starting at different positions and who's not starting the Friday before the season opener. I'm like, that's such garbage. It's like, why can't we, I wish that they would be, say, we think, and I can understand the tackle situation, okay, where you got Jonah Williams, Paris Johnson, and that will be revealed in some way in off-season work video. So, because reporters, when we have access to OTAs and such, are unable to, we are told we cannot report on, even though they're open, on who is on what team, who's starting where, who's working at what position. Because I was not present for that, I got information from someone who was there, blah, 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 blah. We were able to talk a little bit about the left guard position. But when the Cardinals put out videos of their offseason workouts, pay attention to where people are lining up, okay? And that's how we'll get kind of the idea. And that's how we knew that Paris Johnson was not going to be a guard because he was at right tackle. He was on that right side at the edge all offseason. And so keep an eye on that. But whether it's talking Paris Johnson and Jonah Williams, or whether it's that glom of interior guys at left guard at center, it would be nice to say, well, we love Yelda. We're bringing in Evan Brown to compete with him. Or we think the plan is Yelda's going to stay at center. Evan Brown and these other guys are going to compete at left guard. And then you're not committing to anything, but at your least, you're getting a little bit of insight. But he's saying, no, you'll know who's starting. It seems like other than there's basically like four players like on the roster where you're like, these are our starters. Kyler starting, James Conner, Kaiser White, Buda Baker. Then after that, you're like, I don't know. We'll see.
Well, and I think you know that like Paris Johnson and Jonah Williams are starting, but he's not going to give you any reason of
sense, I guess, but why? But yeah, I don't know.
But yeah, like you're saying, it's getting to the point where it's like you don't need to know who the starter is, and you're like, I know I don't need to know, but I want to know, like, so just tell me, like, it's not that big of a deal. It's not,
it could be, it's like what are you thinking, or like, especially when you add a new player, things obviously could change. But what do you envision about Evan Brown?
Right. What did you sign him for? Like, what was, like, are you envisioning that he's going to push to be a starter? Or are you envisioning now that, you know, we don't need
him? Will he be competing at center? Will he be competing at left guard? Because that's a lot of movement to do.
Yeah, and that's just the thing, is you've got, you know, that's just, let's be honest, that's just how he's always... Yeah. Done it, and it's, I'm going to talk a lot and not say anything at all, right?
There was one other comment, and this is about DJ Humphreys, and I have thoughts about it. Now, I will say this, Monty Austin Fort said very kind things about DJ Humphreys, said it was brutal, the timing of his injury, loved everything about him, wished that they didn't have to do it, but then also said, hey, because of the structure of contracts in the NFL and the salary cap. Now, don't get me wrong, we all understand why DJ Humphreys was released. That's definitely an NFL business move, because basically he wasn't going to be able to contribute this year. And so why spend, you know, $16 million? But at the same time, the way he talked about it, like it was inevitable, like he had to, there was no choice but to release him because of the timing of the injury and things like that. Telling him that it's brutal, and that, you know, he'd open the door to a Humphreys return at some point, whatever that means. I will say this, you know, the Cardinals were in a sell. If they really didn't want to do it, they didn't have to. They didn't have to make that move. They didn't have to. They had plenty of salary cap space.
I think a lot of it was, and you're right, they had plenty of salary cap space. I think a lot of it just comes down to they didn't want to hold a spot on top of everything else, right?
Right.
Like they needed to begin the.
And that makes sense. That does make sense, but, you know, because when he's going to be gone, likely till December, maybe the entire season, you need a tackle that you signed to say, hey, he's not going to get replaced when DJ comes back. But you never know what's happening at that point anyway.
No, you don't. And that's what makes it tough. And like you said, it just sucks. It's a sucky thing that
it felt gross. Like we understand why it happened, but at the same time, and my guess, DJ understand, he's a businessman. I bet he's not happy about it. I bet while he understands it, he won't come back to the Cardinals when he comes back. Let's just say this.
No, you would expect not, right?
Anything else of note? Anything else that they kind of talked about was, and there was lots of stuff. They talk about durability. They talked about the, you know, Desmond Ridder. Of course, they said he's going to compete with Clayton Tune. Yeah, we know he's going to compete with Clayton Tune for the backup spot. That doesn't mean we're going to, like, looking at it, Ridder should beat out Tune. Should. But whatever. I think that pretty much covers that. So let's come to next on the Rise Up Spirit podcast, Best of Our Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's look at a couple of things as we now delve more into what the league is coming up with, what proposals there are. We'll delve into a couple of those coming next on Rise Up Spirit. We're back on the Rise Up Spirit podcast, Best of Our Cardinals Talk on the Web. There are 2 to 3 league proposals and a whole bunch of things that NFL teams have proposed. And I think the two that have come right now, and I know that the one news, it wasn't something that was a proposal, but the tush push play will live on in 2024. They decided not to ban it, which makes sense because there's literally only one team that was actually good at it and dominant it. That was the Eagles. And we'll see if that's even the case in 2024, because Jason Kelce retired.
Right. I was going to say, Kelce's retired, so who even knows now? So, yeah, I mean, it just makes it all of it interesting because you've got a situation where other teams tried it. You know, you saw players get injured. Is it something that's viable for the future, or is this just a fad like everything else? I mean, it's kind of the perfect storm, right? You had a undersized, incredibly athletic center. You have the strongest quarterback in the history of mankind. It was kind of just the perfect storm, right, for this all to work out.
And other teams try it, and it's not nearly as successful. But the two things that are being up are for discussion. One is trying to get rid of the hip drop, the swivel hip drop tackle, which is an interesting thing, and with understandably so, because it ends up trapping players' feet and legs underneath them as they get pulled down. But the NFLPA, you know, all about player safety, but the NFLPA came out, the Players Association came out, and they collectively and they said, hey, while we want football to be safer, we want to limit injuries if we can, we oppose this proposal because of the fact that it is going to confuse players, coaches, it's going to be incredibly hard for officials to officiate, and it'll confuse fans. And to then add another layer to make defense that much more difficult on a judgment call on the type of tackle that there is, I lean on the side of the players in this sense. Because the definition of that type of tackle is less defined as the horse collar, which that first was grabbing the shoulder pads from, like, grabbing inside the shoulder pads from behind, and then was also expanded to grabbing anywhere from behind on the nameplate. And we've seen that is a dangerous tackle because of the amount of balance that it pulls people back, knee injuries. That's how Jameis Winston tore his ACL. It's the one time where I saw that happened.
But isn't it also ironic that you can grab a player's dreads and tackle them?
It's true. That's true. But, yeah, oh my gosh, remember when Andre Ellington had his, and when he had his dread pulled by one of those Panthers linebackers? Oh, yeah, and it was my gosh. Yeah. Now, I guess with something like that, with hair, like, it'll hurt, but you are less likely to get ratcheted backwards like that. I get what the league is trying to do, and there's been commentary on TV. I know league officials that we got to get those tackles out of the league, and perhaps that is the thing, but there's also got to be a way to define that better or to teach it differently. Other than that, because, you know, for some players, especially when you have a an undersized defender compared to the guy that you're trying to take down, what else can you do?
Yeah, and that's what it comes down to, is like, how do you do things? And it makes it really tough right now because you're looking at things where the bigger, stronger, faster athletes, and, you know, again, youth football is completely a different freaking, you know, it's like comparing fruits and vegetables. Like, yeah, they're both healthy for you, but it's a completely different game. But I do have a son that is a, you know, defensive player, and he's a very undersized defensive back, but he's he's aggressive and he's physical and he's got to, you know, hit low and do those things. And when you watch him play, you see that and you're like, oh, that's, you know, that's, you don't go, oh, that's dirty, right? Like, that's not your thought process. Your thought process is, oh, like, he's doing what he has to do to make things work. And on the flip side, and it's something we talk about all the time, the skill players are turning into these massive athletes, right? Like, the only other massive, and don't get me wrong, all those guys are massive athletes, but like, the only real like equivalent are the edge rushers, right? Like the freak edge rushers, like the Myles Garretts and things like that. But you know, the guys like, you know, we talked about earlier, George Kittle, Travis Kelce, Mark Andrews, like these big tight ends that move, you know, run sub 4.6. They're bigger than the linebackers are now, right? Like, they're just, and so it's like, how do you combat it? How do you even out, so to speak, the game? And I feel like that's one of the things, that evens it out, is, you know, again, not saying anything about being dirty, but it, like, you're able to really, make plays in a different way and give them these shots. And so it's just, I don't know, it's so hard. And then the fact that the NFL has even said, oh, it's a judgment call, right? Like, yeah, let's give, and I'm not saying anything negative about the refs, but like, let's give the refs more to help.
Right. There's out, right. Like, it's so hard. And they're already having to officiate, you know, certain, yeah, that seems like more that, yeah, that's hard. It's just hard. That's it for something that's not plainly obvious. The other league proposal, I think, is super intriguing. As we've seen over the last several years, that kickoffs have become useless, right? Onside kicks, surprise onside kicks, there's no point to them because of there's no more running start. They're trying to take some of the high speed collisions out of special teams because, especially for kickoffs, it is where they have the highest incidence of concussions and head and neck injuries. And so they've been legislating things out of it, which has led to kickoffs being absolutely worthless. And the proposal that they have, I personally want to see this happen. And so it's going to make it so that returns basically have to happen. It's going to take a little more skill with kicking. It's going to force returners to return things. And simultaneously, it will also kind of reduce some of those high-speed collisions because of the things they have. And so you'll still kick off from the 35. The kicker will start at kick the ball off from the 35. But the coverage team will line up on the across the 50 at the 40-yard line, so, you know, 25 yards away. Interesting concept. And the return team up to, you know, 9 or 10 of their blockers of their return team have to be lined up between the 35 and the 30. And so it's lining things up, and they cannot, and then the kick must either touch the ground or be caught between the 20-yard line and the goal line. And the coverage and return team cannot move until the ball touches down or lands in that landing space. If a ball, like if the kick goes into the end zone, it penalizes just booming kicks. If you kick it out of the end zone or it lands in the end zone and is not returned and it doesn't land before the goal line, then the return team gets it at the 35. So there is incentive to not just boom it out the back of the end zone. And if a returner, if the ball hits the ground in the landing space, goes into the end zone, and the returner downs it, well, then it's a touchback from the 20. So it is beneficial to try and return that. So I'm really intrigued by this because it's creating some sort of a hybrid, like safety thing plus punt, like in terms of the punt coverage, because you don't get, you know, the returners, the return team is there back waiting for, you know, these coverage guys running 50 yards down the field at full speed, while instead they're going to be lined up 5 yards from each other, almost like on a punt. And so it's running side by side in terms of technique, punt coverage, but requiring skill in the return and some skill in kicking. I honestly love this, and I want to see it happen.
Yeah, and I'll be interested to see like how, because I think things like this have to start occurring if they want to move to an 18-game schedule, right? Like you have to have something that gives teams an opportunity to make kickoffs matter, but also that, you know, does affect player safety in a positive way, right? And if you're going to force these guys to play more games, that's one of the things you have to do. And so we'll see how that works out. But yeah, I agree with you. That'd be a nice change.
That'll be fun. Honestly, that's fun. That's fun. That's a fun concept to me. And because kickoff returners can be fun, but like right now we're like, why are you returning that? Like anytime anybody receives the ball in the end zone and they start to return, you're why are you doing that? But it just kind of limits that. Coming next on the Rise of Seared podcast, Mr. Cardinals talking with us. Let's look at some of the team proposals. Some are interesting. Others are kind of whatever. Let's come to next on Rise of Seared. We're back on the Rise of Seared podcast, Mr. Cardinals talk on the web. Last segment, there's some proposals that come from NFL teams. Let me run down these things for one. So the first rule change proposal is from the Lions. And basically, it's to give, if a coaching challenge is successful one of the two times, then that team will get a third challenge, as opposed to the current rule, which would require them to be correct on both challenges. What do you think of that rule? I think sure, why not? Because, yeah.
I always go back to and wonder, you know, like what the impetus for these proposals are, more than like if, like, what's the impetus to make the change. And I'm trying to remember if there was
a situation. I don't remember, but I'm sure the Lions had a case where there was something they wanted to challenge. They got one right and got one wrong, but couldn't challenge it.
Right, and it's usually like in a big game too, right?
So yes.
I was like, did I miss something in the NFC Championship game? I mean, I don't mind it. It is kind of what it is. I think challenges are dumb in and of themselves because they should just be plays that are reviewed and like, oh yeah, we messed that up and the play's done. But you know, the fact that, you know, going back to the ref thing, the hip drop tackle thing, you know, these guys can't get calls right anyways, so it's like, let's put more on their plate. And so yeah, I mean, I'm fine with it because it gives you a chance to kind of bail.
Not that Jonathan Gannon challenges calls anytime.
I was gonna say he did once,
like two,
right?
One challenge all year, and you're like, they don't carry over from game to game, JG. They don't.
Yeah, well, I just don't think he cares. He's kind of like me. He's like, hey, just make a play. Like,
yeah,
stop relying on the refs to bail you out every time. So,
Do you understand the first touch rule? Here's how I understand it: the Eagles want to eliminate the first touch rule, which is on a punt. I think it's this case. If a member of the kicking team touches the ball,
it can be returned.
And it still can be returned. And if anything happens like a turnover, it's fine. It just goes back. Right. If anything bad happens, it goes back to where the kicking team touched it for the first time. which
right. And it's basically to, you know, the so kind of what the opposite of happened in the Super Bowl, right, where it hit a 49ers blocker down the field. It's basically there because, one, what it does is if it hits a punt gunner, let's say, you know, a punting team, if it hits a punt gunner, what ends up happening is typically the ball flings one way or the other, right? Like it's not a very gentle play that happens, right? Where it's like, oh, it just nicked him and oh, no big deal. Like typically if it happens, it ends up being this, the ball flings, you know, 10 yards one way or the other.
Yeah.
And so their thought process is, well, the ball should just be dead where it was touched. Like they were to pick it up. But I think the silly thing about that is accidental touches like that shouldn't be rewarded to the punting team. Like they're basically like they're, and it's such a rare occurrence.
Yeah. I think what it is kind of, because in a case like that, say the 49ers punt the ball, one of their guys, it hits them accidentally, and then the returner decides, and they can do it without risk. They pick up the ball, right, and they do something, but then they fumble it, and it's a turnover. The 49ers don't get the ball back because of that first touch rule. And I think right. What the Eagles want is to eliminate that first touch rule, that if that returner decides to take it, then the ball is live.
It's a live play, and it's like...
And so you're like trying to return that at your own risk.
Right. And I mean, but that's the thing is there, if nobody touches it, let's say the return team doesn't touch it, right? It goes back to where the first touch was anyways. So basically what you're saying is like, we just don't want to give up a big play because we weren't paying attention. Right.
Like, yes.
That's kind of what the long and the short, I mean, I get it. They're like, oh, if a turnover happens, but it's like, why should you benefit? And I get, and I do understand it, but it's like, why should you benefit that your punter hit one of your own guys? And then, you know, you were able, you know, the, and typically when that happens, think about it, when does it happen? It's near the goal line, right?
Yes.
So typically what happens is it's on a pooch or, you know, the coffin corner where they're trying to pin somebody deep. So hang time is more important than distance. And so what they're basically trying to do is eliminate the opportunity to make a big play, but also punish the return team if they try to make a big play off of that happen. And it did happen a while ago, and I can't remember if it happened against the Eagles or what team it happened to, but there was an occurrence where it happened recently, and I remember. I don't like it. I mean, I'm indifferent about it, but I don't necessarily, I wouldn't go for it. Like, it wouldn't be something I would care about, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, I would rather leave the rule alone.
Right. It seems to be something that happens infrequently enough that why worry about it? The third proposal from the Eagles as well is the replacing the onside kick with a 4th-and-20 play from the kicking team's own 20-yard line, needing to reach the 40 to maintain possession. I like it, and the impetus is here. Hey, it's intriguing. One, it's football, and onside kicks are stupid because you can't get that running start anymore. As we saw last season, there were two successful onside kicks all season. One was the right. Cardinals, and they didn't do much with it. But onside kicks are high. Like they're literally just like, hey, hopefully a 4th-and-20 play, that's wild. And because you're starting from the 20, a team would really have to think twice about it to do it, because like if there's an incomplete pass, then they give the ball in the red zone to the winning team. Now, granted, it would only be allowed in the fourth quarter. No, it doesn't say that. It's only when a team is trailing in a game, and it could be happen on twice in a game period. For that would be one I'd love to see, for because that would be, imagine the Chiefs are coming. So this is like you're like a Kyler or a Mahomes or Lamar Jackson. okay, you're trying to come back. You're down two touchdowns in the fourth quarter. You're like, okay, let's do this. A fourth and 20 play. And, you know, you get to the 40 and then you've got the ball again. And you just kind of, that, I think that would add a great intrigue to the league. That's something I hope is approved, because onside kicks are useless anymore.
They're boring.
Penalty challenges. The Colts propose to make it so that coaches and replay officials can review penalties called. Ew. I get it, but ew, because we saw this rule a few years ago with pass interference. One, officials won't overturn it. They won't. They won't overturn. They won't overturn penalties that their colleagues are right. They don't want to do that. And two, the last thing we want to do is to, because those are gross.
Right.
That's gross.
No, thank you.
How about one of the bylaw changes? This is the laws. The Lions proposed this. Right now, NFL teams can designate up to 8 players to return from IR, PUP, and all this for the course of a season. The Lions are proposing that teams in the postseason have unlimited. So if they already used them up, that they can use more during the postseason. I think that's a reasonable thing for postseason teams, to allow teams to be designated for return. I think that's reasonable.
Yeah, I agree.
Here's the other one that's interesting, and I don't like this one. I'm sorry, the Lions didn't propose that one. The Lions did propose that. Okay, the Lions proposed this about IR rules, is that right now, a team, for a player to be eligible to return to use the designation, has to be on the 53-man roster first and then can be placed on IR. The Lions want to make it so that no matter at what point a player is placed on IR, they can be placed on IR during the preseason, they can be placed on the IR during final cuts, before final cuts, that player be allowed to be used a designation to get them. I do not think that will get approved, because the whole purpose of that was to avoid teams from stashing a young player that they want to develop later.
Yeah, I don't like that, because it's just going to lead to a lot of shenanigans.
What about the emergency, expanding the emergency quarterback? Right now, it allows for a team to have, if they have a third quarterback on the 53-man roster, that so they actually burn in a roster spot for third quarterback, that if he is made inactive, he's actually eligible to be emergency quarterback and can be made active. It cannot be for a practice squad quarterback who is elevated to the roster. That cannot happen. But the Bills are proposing that you can elevate a third player from the practice squad if it is a quarterback and have them be the emergency quarterback. I kind of like that, but again, that's...
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
And fine. And then there's two trade deadlines proposals. Right now, it used to be, by the way, after week 6. The trade deadline is currently after week 8. And the Steelers would like to make it after week 9. And then the Browns, Lions, Jets, Eagles, 49ers, and Commanders all combined to propose moving the trade deadline to week 10. As a content creator and reporter, give me that longer trade deadline. That benefits all of us.
Yeah, and it's just one of those situations where you look at it, and this is a situation where they are just trying to kind of make what is a mostly boring situation more interesting, right?
Well, and what it does, it allows for teams.
Right. More teams are eliminated, so therefore more players can be on the shopping block, so to speak.
Yes. And it actually matches a little more some of your other professional leagues, because the trade deadline is not like mid-season in baseball. It's not mid-season in the NBA. It's closer to like the two-thirds point of the season.
Correct.
So I'm okay with that. And again, as a content creator, that means trade rumors for a longer time, right? We can talk about trade rumors after week 6, after week 8, after week 9, up and through week 10, trade rumor articles. Give me clicks, give me content, stuff we can speculate about, especially when we are, if the season is one that requires such.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, at the end of the day, too, while that is one of the nice things about it, the reality is it can help teams shed players at the same rate, right? Like, so you look at it and you go, oh, this guy you know, for instance, and we're not saying it'll happen, but you know, if they can shed Buda Baker later and they're like, oh, okay, that makes sense, as opposed to when it's happening in week 8 and you're like, he's on the injured reserve, right? Right. So you've got some choices. It allows teams to go deeper into things before they have to make tough decisions, and it should open up some more entertainment in that section, because like you said, at the end of the day, that's what everybody wants, is just more content.
Right. Content. All right. That will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Secret Podcast of SR Cardinals Talk on the Web. We'll see how we do the schedule over the next few weeks. We'll try and keep up with the two shows a week. I will say, for those who are listening, we're going to find a way for me to add Howard Balls, the newest addition of the Cards Wire staff. Legendary Cardinals reporter, worked for, you know, forever. Hall of Fame voter, was with SI back in the days when I was a teenager reading Sports Illustrated. I don't know if we're going to, like, I will probably, we'll see at some point during the course of this off season and regular season, not necessarily as a guest, but we will have Howard's hits or Balzer's bits, or I don't know, but where his insights will get added to the stream of the podcast. But until then, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Rue. This is the Rise of Zero Podcast. We'll be back again soon. Thanks, as always, for listening. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up C-Red Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise Up Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up C-Red.